today on the TMZ Podcast.
Welcome to the TMZ Podcast. Derek and Jason here. Derek, Adam Levine, more women are coming forward saying that he had some sort of at least a textual affair with them, if that's an affair, I don't know.
Yeah.
But now there's this, like, people are lining up in two sides here, and I think it's an interesting question about the responsibility that these women, one woman in particular, had towards Adam Levine. Everybody knows he's a happily married, well, a married man.
A married man.
Right?
And got two kids, married, a third one on the way.
And so celebs are lining up on either side. Do we blame the woman for having the affair with a married man, or is it just Adam Levine's fault?
This is fascinating. Let's listen to this clip with Sarah Foster and Emily Ratajkowski.
Always going to be dogs. But like, as women, we need to do...
This is basically a part two. But I think a huge problem in our culture right now is that we just say, oh, men are monsters. They're terrible. They're horrible. We don't hold them accountable. And then we blame other women. We ask women to adjust their behavior instead of just saying men need to change their behavior. It's sexism. It's classic misogyny.
It's a question been asked for a million years, right? Who bears the burden here of not encouraging cheating or not cheating on unsuspecting spouse?
I think there's a reason this debate rages, because there are points to be made on either side. I would think the balance of blame, the large balance, if you have a scale, lies with Adam Levine. He's the one with loyalties that go to Bahati Prinsloo. He is in the relationship. He owes that duty to her. However, Sumner Stroh doesn't really owe a duty of loyalty to Emily Ratajkowski.
That's the alleged mistress.
Right. Exactly. That's why Emily Ratajkowski is saying she bears no wrongdoing in this. She was just sleeping with a guy who she liked, or potentially sleeping with a guy who she liked. And Adam Levine is the one who did the wrong thing. I'm not so sure when a figure is so publicly known as married that Sumner, a person like Sumner, bears zero blame. When you can Google, you see him on red carpets all the time. Her awareness of his marriage matters somewhat in her culpability.
Sure.
Matters a little bit. Sure. That's why we have the term homewrecker. Now, you may not like that term.
I mean, we have lots of terms that are antiquated and mean something that we no longer believe to be true. I just...
What if she absolutely knew he was married and desired to break up the relationship?
Let's assume that she knew she was married. She was flirting with Adam Levine. Maybe you slept with Adam Levine. We don't know. But let's assume that's true, because you're not... You never, in this world of social media, things are a click away. It's pretty obvious he's married. I'm going to assume that she knew he was married. I still don't know what responsibility she has. We all have responsibilities to one another as human beings, I suppose. But if he is coming, I just think that I guess she has some modicum of responsibility. But ultimately,
relative to him, it's timing.
Well, relative to him, it's timing. And I'm not even sure, like... I mean, I suppose there's something if she sought him out and lured him in. But even then... Like, we have responsibilities to our spouses.
Right.
She has no idea what his marital relationship is like. She knows he's married, but lots of people are married, and there's...
And they say the rest is open, or my marriage is falling apart. There's lots of reasons.
Especially
you can tell a woman.
Especially within the celebrity realm. To look at her and to say that you bear responsibility with it, it's such a side conversation that it's an insult to side conversations. It's way out in the suburbs of this conversation is.
Right. I agree. There's some scenario where she's plotted against Bahati Prinsloo for years and lied in wait, where she would seem like a bad person, like a vindictive person trying to ruin Bahati Prinsloo's life. But all of the other scenarios where Adam may have sweet-talked her, Adam may have said, I'm in a relationship.
Which, by the way, the
Adam
facts point to here, because they had this long text exchange, that he was fully enmeshed in, whatever. I just think it's a distraction to even have the conversation about her culpability. The conversation is about his, but even then, we don't know what his relationship... I mean, she's obviously... You know, it's obviously caused some serious damage to the relationship. He has come out and he has apologized for his actions. He said there was no affair, but nevertheless, he went too far. I think that's the phrasing that he had.
Crossed the line. Yeah,
right?
Look, he's taken some accountability. Is it enough? Emily Ratajkowski is saying... And she's going through a messy divorce now, to give you some context, where there are allegations of cheating by her husband. And she's saying, like, look, we shouldn't... just accept that men are dirty dogs. She's like, that's unacceptable.
Right.
They need to change their behavior, not women need to sort of adjust themselves to account for the fact that men behave in this way. There's a point to be made there. I want to go back to Adam Levine. Adam Levine is a guy who now people are coming out of the woodwork, and he clearly has some sort of predilection for for texting online. And that can be innocent, and it can also be not innocent. He's already made an apology about the ones with Sumner. What does this do to him, though? He's a rock star. Does Adam Levine exist in the public sphere as a squeaky clean guy, or a guy who's tatted up that this is sort of okay and his image will survive because his image was never Dudley Do-Right? Tom Hanks.
I think if we've learned anything during the course of the Me Too movement, which sort of started in 2017-ish, is that there is nothing that musicians can do that will forever damn their career. Nothing.
Except for R. Kelly.
Well, I guess that's right. Yeah. So I take back nothing.
But there.
You have
but
to
no, but
do
look
something
at how extreme
as,
that was.
How extreme yes. that is. I don't believe this has any impact on his career. It doesn't have any impact. I mean, he has, the one thing it might have an impact on is he is the face of a number of products, right?
Yes, and he's the judge on a show.
And he's the judge. I don't think it affects the judge on the show. I think
maybe
he's got
not.
The voice
yeah.
gig, and he just kind of goes through that. He is, though, the spokesman. I know Proactive, an acne clearing thing that yes. that he's a spokesman for, and there are other things like that.
Old school consumer good companies tend to not like this kind
right,
of press.
Right, right,
I agree with that.
But that said, I really don't think it affects him very much.
Yeah, I think it's a case study of it has to be a very, very extreme example. You have like sort of the R. Kelly's to divorce the person from their general persona. And Adam Levine is a rock star. Rock stars since the days of Mick Jagger are known as very sexual.
I thought
sexual
you were going to sell Lotharios.
No, but you know
yeah.
what I mean? They're
yeah,
sort
yeah,
of
yeah.
known for being out there and sexually charged. And so this doesn't seem that far-fetched. And therefore, I don't think it ruins him going forward. It may hurt his marriage. And he seems to be trying to work
yeah.
on that. That
yeah.
I can't speak to. But in terms of whether he will exist as a celebrity anymore, I think so. I think he rides
fine.
Through this.
He's going
to
be just fine. Yeah.
All right, let's move on
Speaking
to
of people who exist solely as celebrities, Khloe Kardashian. Season 2 of The Kardashians is getting right into Khloe Kardashian's secret surrogacy with Tristan Thompson, right? That they had this child together apparently through surrogacy. They keep saying that, and I'm not sure I fully buy it, but nevertheless.
Take it at face value.
Take
I'm
it
not
face
sure you
value.
Can, but take it.
Right, right, right. And on the first, on the episode of the show that came out, I think last night, Khloe is just bawling about, as she's bringing this up with her family.
Oh, she's
her
in
family,
one of those testimonials too, saying, I'm ready to talk about this.
Right, and her family is sort of incredulous about this thing, and she's coming for, I am finally ready to talk about this. What can't help strike us is the way in which reality and fiction and what they're doing for the show sort of come together. Nothing they do is for their actual lives. It is all for television.
I would say it somewhat differently. I would say their lives are public. Their lives are the public. So it's impossible to disentangle. I do think there's an element of reality to what you're watching because they exist solely in the public realm.
Oh,
I don't think you're
on.
Able to
you,
really
you,
disentangle.
You're saying the dog is actually wagging the tail here. You're saying that they're actually living their lives. We're just seeing every element of their lives on television.
Yeah, and I think you see a very sort of emphasized, highlighted version and an exaggerated version of what real life is. But I do think there's an element of reality simply because we're seeing every beat of it.
I disagree.
You think there's an entirely private sphere that we don't know
about?
No,
that's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
I think that they are doing things in their real life with the purpose of exploiting it on television. I think that Khloe Kardashian chose to have a child with Tristan Thompson specifically for the content that it would
knowing
make.
There would be drama.
Knowing there would be
his,
drama.
Given
correct.
His propensity
correct.
For cheating.
If she finds some nice young man who she wants to marry and have a child with, that is boring.
Boring
Having
television.
A child with this serial cheater is good television.
I'll tell you what is, so there's a part of this where she says, tearfully, I'm ready to finally talk about this. And you can question her sincerity, but she did.
Can you?
Yeah. Oh, you have, obviously.
I think
you're not only allowed to, you should.
Right, saying. Exactly.
Okay, so the part that really bothers me is not Khloe going in on this and saying, I'm upset. You know, it's Kris Jenner's role. I see her as the marionette, the
For
puppeteer,
sure.
the grand yeah. puppet master. And she has a bit where she says, it's even more tearfully, it's so difficult to watch my daughter go through this. And there's something so hollow about Kris and so venal to me as a viewer watching a mother
right.
watch her daughter's pain for a storyline. That's grosser to me than the girl
yes.
expressing her pain as a
yes.
storyline.
And doubling down on that, it just came out in the last couple of weeks that the Kardashians were likely behind the Ray J. Kim Kardashian sex tape.
Yes, Kim it's on the heels of this, so that's where my
heels
mind
of that,
is on
right?
Chris.
Where yes. Kim goes on and takes a quote-unquote lie detector test to say that she wasn't involved, but then Ray J starts releasing all these documents, which show that at the very least, Kim was acutely aware of the distribution of the sex tape long before it happened, actually signed a contract and made a ton of money off of it. You have to call into question every one of these statements of, I hate watching my daughters go through these pain.
Yes.
You are creating the pain for television.
Yes.
Or maybe there is no pain. Maybe they are so sort of...
And you're the parent. What strikes me viscerally, you're a parent, I'm a parent. You set the values for your children. They are just blobs, basically. Yes. And you sort of, you know, define them as life goes on. And when you, who know better, sort of set this framework up, and then everyone plays their part. Chloe plays her part. Kim plays her part and does the sex tape. And you're sort of behind it in a deliberate way, sort of orchestrating it.
Yeah.
It seems more wrong to me than the participants, than the actors in the play. She's the director of the play.
But ultimately, I think the question we have, is there anything wrong with it? Right. They made themselves billionaires out of this, a collective family of billionaires, right?
Sure.
And are we just bringing our own values that might be, we don't want our daughters in sex tapes, we don't want them getting pregnant with men that cheat on them and they have no relationship with, or it can't be a trusted relationship. We are just bringing our own values. Now, you and I may agree that our daughters, we would not like our daughters to have sex and have the world see it just for money.
Yep.
But maybe that's our values and we're judging them for it.
I think you're right. We're certainly imposing sort of our values and sort of projecting them on Chris. I think Chris sleeps well at night. If the question is, does Chris think she's done wrong?
Yeah, I guess
I don't think
it.
So. I think Chris thinks she built this family into an empire. And, and she did.
She did.
Now, at what cost?
She would say there is no cost too high.
Yes.
Well, presumably she would say
that. Or the cost is very high, but look what we've got. Like,
right.
You know, we
right.
really built an empire. Now, yes, it had some bad elements to build it that way. A sex tape. I'm sure she's not proud of these things, but she's also built a massively important and profitable enterprise. So
you sure
it was
she's
worth
not proud
it to
of
her.
That? You sure she's that, not sitting
know.
There
well,
going.
Well, that's sick. If she's proud of having.
Well,
maybe not.
I don't think it's sick, but I think it's different than what
different.
You and I would choose, and maybe it's wrong to make value judgments like that, but I think there's something wrong with selling out your daughter the way she did.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit. I watched them. We are all very
selling
familiar
daughter,
with the Kardashian
out.
Family. There's a bit of a sliding doors issues. I don't know that this family would have gone in this direction if they had stayed married to Robert Kardashian. You know, if he were around, do you think that his sort of influence on the family? Because I think of Bruce Jenner as just being sort of like,
I don't know,
rolled over.
I don't know.
It's hard to say. But anyway,
we're
fascinating.
We're saying that the man who sold out to O.J. Simpson would have been the moral compass of the family.
I'm not sure that holds much water.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move on to a sadder story. This is Adnan Syed, the subject of the massively popular Serial podcast, is a free man. He is out of prison now. He's on house arrest for 30 days while prosecutors decide whether to recharge him or charge someone else in the murder of Haemin Lee, who was murdered back in 1999. Now, the family has said they were, the family of Haemin Lee, said they were blindsided by this. They didn't know anything was going to, he was going to be released. They have spent the last 23 years believing that Adnan Syed murdered their daughter and was paying the price for that by serving a sentence of life in prison. They're upset.
I'm going to put it right to you. Why are we looking at the wrong thing when we focus on the family's unhappiness that he's been released because they think he did it?
Because prosecutors don't represent victims.
Right.
They don't. It seems like they do. And that's why, you know, I sort of want to clear the record a little bit of how these things work. A prosecutor, when a crime is committed, is charged with making sure the accused is punished for the wrongdoing. The cops arrest someone. They investigate. If there's enough there that they think they can convict someone beyond a reasonable doubt, they want to put that person away. They do not represent the interests of the victims. However, victims are often happy that prosecutors are putting someone away who murdered their family member. But you can't mistake who they represent. They represent the state. They represent they represent society's interest in punishing wrongdoers. They do not represent victims getting blood justice.
Yeah.
So now when the victim's family says, hey, we're fine with him leaving as long as you have someone else to charge, or as long as you, sort of run down these other two suspects, and then we're fine with it. That's not the way it works. The prosecutors want to say, we don't have enough now that we feel confident imprisoning Adnan Syed. That is independent of whether we have someone else to charge. We can't keep a guy locked up who we don't have confidence in our conviction.
It's so important to recognize the distinction. Prosecutors are not saying they don't think Adnan Syed did it. They are saying two things. Number one, they made mistakes when it came to the original prosecution. They did not provide the defense certain potentially exculpatory evidence that they could have used in the defense of their client.
Which is gigantic. This is called the Brady rule. You have to turn over potentially exculpatory evidence.
Right.
Evidence that tends to prove he's innocent.
No matter what we think, and Derek and I are both of the opinion, by the way, having dived into this once upon a time, that he committed this killing. I really don't have that much doubt that he did. The evidence to me stacks up perfectly in favor of guilt. That doesn't change the fact that prosecutors made some serious, serious mistakes when they prosecuted him. And the sanction for that, as much as it may disgust us, is that he goes free.
That's right.
That's the way it goes.
That's our criminal justice system. We'd rather have guilty people go free than innocent people get convicted. Yes. That's just the way we've set it up.
Now, the state's attorney has come forward and says she would like to recharge him and prosecute him again. This time, the defense will have all the evidence. It's very hard to prosecute somebody 25 years after a murder. It's just very hard.
Witnesses have died. Their memories have you know, sort of faded.
Yes.
Evidence has decayed over time. It's very, very hard.
And in this case, all those witnesses have talked to podcasters, have talked to documentarians. There's so many statements out there. The record is so complicated. There's so many things that have been taken out of context and spun. It's just...
And paneling a jury is more difficult. Everyone has thoughts on this case. Yes. It's been so widely publicized. It's very difficult.
But putting that aside for a second, prosecutors had no choice but to let him free. And it is not...
Trust me, they're not happy about this. This is a black mark on a prosecutorial office to say, hey, we locked up a guy and we screwed up. They're not happy about this.
Yeah, and it all goes back. You can take it for what it is. The old adage in our system of democracy, in our court system, that it is better to let 10 guilty men go free than convict one, put one innocent man behind bars.
Yeah.
And that's our system, and take that for what it is.
It's fascinating to see sort of the public's receipt of this information, because a lot of people are saying, oh, finally justice is done. Adnan Syed was wrongly convicted. It was a gross miscarriage of justice to lock him up for this long. But now people are starting to look at the family, and they're saying, well, this stinks for them. They had some sense of closure. Someone was locked up, and now they're adrift, and they still got a dead daughter that they're sort of mourning and bringing all these memories back. So it's very interesting to see how the
public is processing. He did serve 22 years in prison, so the family has some measure of, you know, retribution for that. 22 years, a long time. No question about it.
And they're not happy if Adnan didn't do it. They didn't want a kid locked up who they didn't, but they seem to think that they had the right person.
Yeah. All right, let's end on this, Derek. Yeah. Should we talk about Mike Trout's illustrious career?
Let's talk about Aaron Judge. You know, so for those of you who don't know, I'm a huge Yankee fan.
Yeah.
Charles in our office is also a huge Yankee fan.
Yeah.
Jason is a Dodgers fan, but it is the year of the Yankees. And Aaron Judge...
Well, that's not true. That's not true.
I knew that wouldn't even pass muster. The Dodgers are the best team in baseball, but the best player in baseball this year has been Aaron Judge. It's pretty clear. Shohei Ohtani and the Angels is quite good. But he hit his 60th home run. That is such a magical number in baseball because it's Babe Ruth's number. And Babe Ruth was a Yankee and he hit all those home runs. And now Aaron Judge has tied the single season mark that Babe Ruth originally set of 60 home runs in the season.
And obviously that mark was surpassed by Roger Maris in 1961. He had 61 home runs. But the big difference is that the season was expanded from 154 to 162 games. Roger Maris always had an asterisk next to his number because it took him eight extra games to do it. In this case, Aaron Judge has done it in fewer than 154 games. He's actually beaten Babe Ruth's record on its face. And we know that all the people in baseball history that have had more home runs than Aaron Judge and Roger Maris and Babe Ruth, all of them are tainted by steroids.
Barry Bonds, Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa, those are the guys.
All of whom big roid dudes. I don't even want to say alleged. They're all big roid dudes. They've all been caught. They've all been, the proof is evident out there. And so it's one of the most remarkable things in the long and illustrious history of baseball.
It really is. It's been wonderful to watch. It's still going. There's about, I think, 15 games left in the season. It's likely that he's going to surpass Roger Maris and hold the record for the American League, at least, because that record is 61.
And I would say it's baseball's
and probably
record.
Baseball's record in a lot of people's minds. And it's just been a lot of fun. Now, the playoffs, a different picture.
Playoffs are different, but I want to go back to your greatest fear that you articulated to me this morning.
What is that?
Aaron Judge has PEDs. He's tested and test positive.
It's something that causes some sleepless nights. I'll wake up in a cold sweat sometimes. If he ever tests positive, it would be so horrendous for baseball because it's been such a feel-good story. He seems so well-suited to this moment. I remember Roger Maris, the stories about Roger Maris, where his hair was falling out. A lot of people weren't rooting for him to surpass Babe. Everyone loves Aaron Judge.
Aaron Judge is one of the nicest guys in the world. Yeah. He's
You don't want to see that fall from grace because it would be a splash.
Let's do a prediction right now. Aaron Judge famously turned down the Yankees like 12-year, $400 and some million offer in the offseason. He's had one of the great seasons, offensive seasons in baseball history.
In a contract year, no less. Yes.
What is your average yearly prediction for the average yearly salary that for Aaron Judge's next contract?
He's going to get probably close to $40 million a year. He's going to get probably $38 million a year.
I go 45.
$45
million? $45
million. The Yankees can afford it.
Yeah, they sure can.
They're one of the only, the other team that can afford it? The Dodgers.
Dodgers can afford it.
All right, that'll do it for us today. Download the podcast, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah.